it back.
Salutations and shit, folks. Welcome, 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 welcome back to another episode of your favorite travel podcast, where your host, D. Carey, have an experiential conversation about the nuanced ways that travel intersects with regular life. So, let's get into it. Cowboy Carter. Did you think we weren't going to do it? Did you think that there wasn't going to be a travel conversation here? I love a good challenge. I can kind of, you know, how there are people that can make anything about them. I can low-key make anything about travel. And so I went with a little challenge and I said, you know, I am thoroughly engrossed in this album. So let's see if we can figure out a way to make this episode appropriate. So since it's my podcast, we're just going to start with me saying how much I love the album. In the description box, I might, if I remember, list, I guess, a chapter mark as to where the album review ends and then where like the travel comes. But basically, I just wanted to tell y'all how I felt about certain songs. It's not going to be a lot because honestly, I'm not a stan. I am a fan, not a casual fan, but a very strong fan. And however, I'm not into the lore and all that other kind of stuff. So I don't have that capacity to sit and talk to y'all for hours about our good sis. However, I do entertain others who can. I am very much so looking forward to the read and hearing what they have to say about the album, especially considering they met her. Ooh. Moving on. There is something, what's the word that I'm looking for? Anointed to me about Beyoncé in the way that she is able to inspire so many other people, outside of music, outside of singing, outside of, you know, her wheelhouse, outside of creation, if you will. There's just something beautifully gifted about her ability to inspire other people in other ways. And I particularly enjoyed about this album, not just the music, but also the storytelling, the bits of history that are coming out about a lot of what she has compiled into this beautiful work of art for us. And I especially love the way she has, in this particular album, in this project, if you will, merged genres and reclaimed a genre. And the reclaiming of the genre for me is what inspired me to think about reclaimed spaces. And so, you know what? Change of plans. Let's start with the travel episode and then we'll get to the Beyoncé at the end for the good folks. So reclaimed spaces are one of the things that I find I connect with in a sense of being a creative. I am very much so an ideas girl. Execution, hey, not necessarily my strong point, but there's always something going on in my brain. So the idea of revitalizing, giving new life to something that already exists, or reaching back, right, to the origins of a thing and infusing the current with the old. Following me here? So one thing that I got to say that I appreciate and stand out to me about some travels are reclaimed spaces. Spaces that were one thing became something else, or that have a particular thing, an essence that they're well known for, but then at some point that changes and becomes something else. The one thing that stands out so very strongly to me is it was a walking tour that we'd done in Philly. And I want to say it was, for some reason, I feel like it was a no reservations tour. It was loosely based off a lot of different places that the good brother, Anthony Bourdain, had visited while in Philly. And there was an artist whose name I cannot remember right now. It is escaping me. But there were so many of his pieces of art throughout Philly. And he used a lot of recycled items. And he poured himself into the work that he did. Another one that pops up for me was the Joshua Tree experience where, ooh, and the name was right here. It was right here on the right side of my nose that just flew away. But the art installation that we'd gone to, I won't say it was in the middle of the desert because there were residential homes surrounding maybe two sides of it, but then great large expanse and like a valley on the other side. But Noah Purifoy, there we go. The artist, a black man, who basically did a found items. What we may consider trash, he found to be art. And he used a lot of these items and created, I don't know how large it is. I can't scale what an eight. I don't play football, so I can't say it's a football field size. I don't farm, so I can't tell you if it's an acre or not. But I'd say about the size of a small mall parking lot. This is more in line with my scope of size, if you will. But I'd say a substantial amount of space was designated for his reclaimed, I don't want to say reclaimed art because the art isn't reclaimed. The items used to create the art is what is reclaimed. But he used the space there and had beautiful pieces that were set, staged and arranged there. So I have found myself to be very much so drawn to and appreciative of these spaces that were initially something and then by the stroke of an artist turned into something beautiful that we can appreciate. So one of the things that I decided to just randomly Google was reclaimed black spaces in New York. I am a New Yorker and I felt like Beyonce did the 1-2 for her home region, being a country girl. I'm not a country girl, but I am a city girl. And there's no reason to believe that there has not been, that there are not opportunities for me to visit reclaimed spaces here in my own city. And so immediately the first thing that came to mind for me was the African Burial Ground. That actually is an area that I am relatively familiar with in the city. Turns out actually all of the points, all of the areas that I'm going to discuss in today's episode are located in Lower Manhattan. I'm always in Lower Manhattan. So I am going to make it a point to actively get to these places. These are things that I know that I'm interested in, but I feel like accessibility, because it's so accessible to me, it's right there. It's just one of the things that kind of just is in the back of my mind, like, oh, I'll just go another day, or, oh, yeah, I'm gonna be over there next week, or I'll be over there next month anyway, so I'll go then kind of thing. And I feel like it's kind of like that friend that lives up the block, but y'all don't really see each other often. But then you're all butthurt when they decide to move. It's like, girl, y'all have lived like 2 miles apart from each other for the better half of maybe 20 years. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, when am I going to see you? Girl, you've never seen me. Like, that's not really y'all thing anyway. It's a very few and far in between thing, right? So that's kind of how I feel about certain areas that are very easily accessible to me. Since they're right there, they don't necessarily come up as, you know, things to travel to or things to make time to visit, because I feel like maybe not for you, but hopefully not for you, but it kind of feels like when the conversation of travel comes up, many of us go to areas that are so much further away or locations that require a bit more movement, if you will, to get to. And there are plenty of opportunities in our own backyard. So the first thing I thought of was the African Burial Ground. It's actually located on the corners of like Elk and Duane streets. And I believe there is an entrance to what is the, I guess, the sitting, the visiting center on Broadway, 290 Broadway. They're all, the streets are very, they're very clearly marked. And it, once you're in there, I will say that Lower Manhattan, in like, once you get closer to the water, like the closer you get to the water, the weirder the streets get. Like they get real small, and there are alleys in Lower Manhattan. New York, I'm not an expert on all of Manhattan or New York City, but I know that when we were in Philly, it was so, what's the word? Like, oh snap, this is cool. Not serendipitous, not just cool. There's a word that expresses that, but alleys. You know, when you watch a movie and you see somebody walk down an alley, or, you know, you're reading a book or some type of narrative and they're describing some kind of a dark alley or a questionable alley. And I'm like, well, we don't really got those. Like most shit is, I mean, we have dark streets, but not really alleys. There are alleys, or at least the closest tiny narrow streets that cars barely drive on, that cars barely drive on. We have a couple of them, and I have found the most to be, from my experience, in Lower Manhattan. But say all that to say, that's the general area, and it is noted that in 1991, during pre-construction work for a new federal office building, this is in the area where a lot of the federal buildings are in Lower Manhattan. So if you're familiar with where the federal buildings are, not too far from World Trade Center or South Street Seaport, let me take that back. It is a bit from South Street Seaport, but from World Trade Center and like Fulton. Fulton is a bit away, but less than 2 miles. Like you could walk it. It's not that big a deal. Like if you're on the Fulton, I think it's Fulton Street stop in Manhattan, in Lower Manhattan, for those of you that are visiting the area. That is something that I'm certain is popping up on quite a few of your tourist, you know, locations or stops that you'd be taking if you're taking the subway to any area in Lower Manhattan. That's a pretty central one. But that general area, pre-construction work, 1991, workers found remains of, well, the beginning of what is up to 400 men, women, and children that were pretty much just lost to history for a long period of time. I want to say before that, it was like a lot of like a dump site and just nothing really going on, because now they're developing, well, in 91, they were developing the space for federal building. So during the 17th and 18th centuries, free and enslaved Africans were buried in what is a 6x6 acre burial ground in Lower Manhattan, outside the boundaries of the settlement of New Amsterdam, which would become New York, which I also thought was pretty fucking cool, because then it got me to wondering, well, what were the actual borders of New Amsterdam? Like, where were those areas? And where did Central Park fall on this? Because if you're not familiar, Central Park used to be a heavily black area, and that got shit on to make Central Park. But the African burial ground was designated a National Historic Landmark in 93 and named a National Monument in 2006. And that was reclaimed and designated a point of interest and a memorial for the people who were interned there. There's actually like a whole project. I have a bunch of links in the description box for your perusal. And there were multiple steps to the process, and they worked with Howard University to, I don't want to say carbon date, but to investigate and to research the bones and the matter that was, not matter as if there was any flesh or anything like that, but whatever was excavated, whatever was dug up, that was all researched and documented. Schoenberg was involved. I would like to say that the remains will remain at Howard University. I didn't know it was that the burial ground area was managed by the National Park Society. That was an interesting little tidbit. But the African burial ground was obviously the first space that came to mind in terms of something that has been reclaimed. Something that I was a little bit surprised to consider, but when you think about it, it makes perfect sense, is the Tenement Museum. So I believe, again, I'm always in the area, so I've passed it plenty of times, never gave it any thought, because first of all, what is a tenement? So around Civil War era, it basically became synonymous with just shit housing. The overall definition, like if you just Google what the definition is, it's basically an apartment building, shared residences, common hallways and stairwell and entry access, right? So I'm like, so what makes it different than a fucking apartment building? Like, why is this a tenement and this a building or a rental unit and the such? And essentially, it's because since post-Civil War era, tenement has been synonymous with it actually having poor and substandard condition, living conditions for those living in it. And the Tenement Museum is in Lower Manhattan. They have more than one location, and I want to say one, I think they're both on Orchard Street, and let me see if I can find the address for you. No, I closed the tab, but the Tenement Museum, going back, tenement by the end of the Civil War was a term for housing for the urban poor with well-established connotations for unsafe and unsanitary conditions. So it was just something that when you say apartment is one thing, but when you say tenement is something else. So that we're clear about that. The Tenement Museum, here's a little 1-2 on them, and then we'll get into the reclaiming. So, well, all of it is reclaiming, but specifically the Black narrative, if you will. Give me a minute, we'll roll there. So Tenement Museum welcomes you to the homes of immigrant, migrant, and refugee families to inspire connections between past and present and to promote an inclusive, expansive, and pluralistic American identity. We tell the stories of working class tenement residents who moved to New York City from other countries and other parts of the country. Their work helped build the city and the nation, and their stories help us understand our history. While textbooks often overlook the stories of ordinary people, our tours immerse visitors in the tenement hallways, kitchens, and parlors where families carved out their lives. And that, for me, is a very key factor in the reclaiming, because there is always, it's not an Audre Lorde quote. I actually found another article. Will you just, as a side note here, follow your curiosities. This got so freaking interesting. All I did was Google reclaimed Black spaces, New York City. I challenge you to drop that in your Google search bar, reclaimed Black spaces in your city, and see what pops up. And don't just stop at like the very obvious locations, or like click on the PDFs, click on the .org, or click on the colleges and the schools and the different universities. There was one young lady that wrote, you like somebody's senior paper or something popped up in it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, girl, this actually looks like something interesting. It was 18 pages. So I was not going to get into it before this, but I saved it so that I could revisit. I still have to say, follow those curiosities. Back to my other point, reclaiming stories. I specifically love that they are highlighting that textbooks will highlight, obviously, the larger picture, those important stories, but regular people are so crucial and critical to history, not just American history, not just Chinese history, not just, you know, Russian history or German history, not the individual country, not the individual continent. History globally, individual people. They don't become big people, famous people, world-renowned people, or historically notable people until like the big thing is done. Before that, they were regular people. And then whatever the grandiose of what they did or lived or their contribution in some shape or form, make them the big people. Because keep in mind, even like obscenely rich people are still regular people until their obscene richness. Granted, to us, they're not regular. I don't mean regular in that sense, but regular in the sense of historical context, the story of history. Even obscenely rich people are regular people until something about them makes them not regular. And the not regulars of the world still move and shake and lead history to where it's going to go, whether changes are made because of or for the regular people are involved. So I'm particularly interested. And I had said this a couple of weeks back because we had heard something on, I want to say NPR, shout out to them. Love NPR. I don't know what the particular story was, but it was something that brought the Tenement Museum front of mind and had me wanting to check them out. I think it was someone that wrote like a biography or like a manuscript or something. Don't remember, but it was interesting. And then seeing this pop up again, it was like, oh, so Black spaces are involved, you say? So in 2017, and this is on their website, and chef's kiss, whoever wrote this, there was one typo. Other than that, beautiful statement. In 2017, the Tenement Museum committed to telling broader stories of people who have shaped our city and country. This tour brings Black and African American history into our museum's stories, and in our work to expand whose stories we tell, we will incorporate research from this project into many of our tours and programs. Our work on this tour also informs the museum's new ongoing commitment to take action against racism and anti-Blackness. We offer our support to the Black Lives Matter movement against police brutality and white supremacy. We believe that the path forward must be forged by learning from our country's past. And that last part wasn't necessarily important. However, I felt that it was nice to highlight because a lot of organizations don't give a shit. We would hope that they actually do, but what's to say, right? Because there was another really vulnerable statement that they had that was down here in the second paragraph. For years, our current and former staff advocated for us to acknowledge Black experiences. We join these efforts now to learn from them as we develop this tour. And I thought that that right there, that was like the, I might believe you. Because you can acknowledge that. It's not that this is new. It's that you didn't pay attention before. And I can appreciate that level of, not deprecation, but that level of, we was playing. We might have been playing in the in your faces before. But you know what? Either the right person pulled our collar or enough people pulled our collar. But we're here now. And so I thought that it was very interesting and very, not inspiring, I guess very beautiful to see that there was a very definitive and concerted effort to include Black stories in these stories of regular people who contributed to building the city to what it is today. And it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know how y'all missed it in the beginning, but we're here. And so they offer tours and opportunities to see what those spaces looked like, experience that, and learn the histories of the people who lived in those areas. And they also highlight a couple of other locations in Lower Manhattan that are preserving Black history in that area. St. Augustine's Project, Black Gotham Experience, Mfanda Kalunga Community Garden, which is actually near the African Burial Center, and Fab NYC, which works with artists to do, not monthly, but I want to say it's annual. I believe it's in May, but new creative work on Black histories and communities in Lower East Side. So the Tenement Museum has thankfully included more Black stories and is working to highlight that. Next on my list of reclaimed spaces, this was new to me. I'd not been familiar. I'd been a little familiar with the history, but not particularly familiar with this organization, but MORA, Museum of Reclaimed Urban Spaces. hadn't a clue that it was a thing. One thing, is this the thing or was this the thing? There was a really, so there's going to be a link to Atlas Obscura and then also just the direct link to MORO, the Museum of Reclaimed Urban Spaces. However, let me see. Oh, I think I have it open here. Yes. So from the Atlas Obscura website, basically the mission of the Museum of Reclaimed Urban Spaces, Morris, is to preserve history and promote scholarship of grassroots urban space activism by researching and archiving efforts to create community spaces. There was another documentary that we had watched, I want to say it was around the holidays, and it was focusing on and highlighting artists in Manhattan, I want to say like in the 80s or so, and this absolutely came up. And so it was one of those, not an aha, but like a, oh, connection here. There's more information out here. And then sometimes you know, and my grandma used to always tell me, like, you don't have to necessarily do what I'm saying to do, but just listen to what I'm saying, because at least it's in your head. And at some point, maybe it'll be useful to you. And so this kind of reminded me of connections here, you know, different artists in the area and just the history of my city from not just the 80s, but y'all a time. So back to where I was. And also, this organization is what kind of opened my mind up to that reclaiming of spaces also kind of being like a political stance or like a political declaration, if you will. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to get to that in here. So archiving efforts to create community spaces, they also exhibit materials, documents that these actions educated people on political implications of reclaimed space. That's what it was. So instead of skating by, it was, they also exhibit materials that document these actions to educate people on the political implications of reclaimed space. So in a nutshell, in the 50s and the 60s, they started making that money. The wealthies, we know who the wealthies are, the whites. So they got their money, left the city, started moving out, outer boroughs, all that jazz. Unfortunately, the landlords now not seeing the value in maintaining or even paying the fucking taxes, which is wild to me that somehow they felt like this was going to be a better option than just doing their fucking job. However, they didn't see the value, so they didn't give a fuck. They just kept collecting their rent until the city repossessed those buildings. At that point, the city had all of this shit and they weren't able to maintain it. So, well, in fairness, also, the city wasn't an economic crisis, but I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were just now repossessing all of these properties and didn't necessarily have the wherewithal or the capacity to maintain them. I think it might have, I don't know, been a better idea to force the people who owned them initially to do it. But what do I know? I didn't take that test. I don't know. My course of degree did not cover that in particular. However, we're here. So not only did the city, like, not only was the city not able to maintain these buildings, they basically let the communities die. And there was a phrase, it is called planned shrinkage. Basically, what they did was cut off services. So not just not maintain the buildings, but that's also a thing, but they weren't maintaining infrastructure and they shut down schools and fucking firehouses. So they were slowly killing these communities, but fuck the people that are there, because it's like the people are still, there are human beings still here, and the city somehow, the city. So you and I could be forced to pay our property taxes. You and I are penalized and fucked over for not maintaining our properties and the such. However, the city let the initial landlords get away with this. And then they in turn did the same shit to these people. So this is like, the asses in my stomachs is moving around right now. Because it's just like, I just, rabbit hole, trying not to go there. However, we progress. So everything's crumbling around them. But by the late 60s, struggling artists, punks, Anarchists, transients, and activists saw an opportunity to reclaim these spaces. With a lot of hard work, they transformed the rotting tenements, there's that word again, into livable spaces, the abandoned schools into community centers, and plots that were rubble into community gardens. And that's going to lead me to the next point when I'm finished here. But in the 80s, everybody's winning. Wall Street, gang, gang. Niggas is making money again, right? So, of course, people started moving back into the city in the 80s. And the price of real estate started to rise. And the Lower East Side started looking desirable again. So, unfortunately, all of that work from the 60s, late 60s here, now we're in the 80s. And it's not like it just popped in like 81. In the 80s. There's 10 years in the 80s, right? So this is now over 20 years of just dilapidation and shit. And now all of a sudden they see money because people started to move back into the city. And so now they're trying to get rid of these squatters. And unfortunately, this led to a lot of them being evicted and their community spaces destroyed and made inaccessible. There was a lot of fighting, legally. Squatters and activists fought hard and most were evicted. However, light at the end of the tunnel, sadly, only about a dozen squats became legal co-ops. And, however, a lot of the gardens are actually still an essential part of the neighborhood today. So this is what the Museum of Reclaimed Urban Spaces highlights and tries to share the history of. And the part about it being also like a political resistance or a political movement was like a, oh shit, I never even really considered it that way. Because now for the next point, right? Reclaimed urban spaces coming up. 420 Earth Day. Actually, it's going to be April 22nd because they said it's going to be on a Saturday. But the city, New York, is working on there being, it is called Open Streets, car-free Earth Day. And essentially, it's about encouraging people to just leave their cars behind. I get the theory. I'm a little wishy-washy on how I feel about that. However, reclaiming the streets because city development and planning, in fairness, is pretty car heavy. A lot of cities are very much so planned and developed based on cars. And I get that. You know, we want to conserve the planet. We want to be able to live here for as long as naturally possible if we don't kill ourselves first. So I'm all for sustainability and fixing the planet and conserving the planet. However, I just feel like so much of that pressure is put on the me's of the world, the regular motherfucking peoples, and not the Targets and not the Amazons or not the really, really huge mega corporations with all the resources to deter and alter and change their practices, the people that are making the biggest impact on the environment are not guilted the same way regular people are. Telling me to turn the water off while I brush my teeth is absolutely going to cut down on my water bill. But is it going to save the water problem? No. All of us even doing that still isn't doing as much as what the major corporations, the fucking oil companies dumping shit into water, and you telling me to turn the water off while I brush my teeth? I hear you. However, I think somebody else needs to hear you a little more than I need to hear you. Expressly, they should hear you before you start talking to me, right? Because if you really want to make big change, why start with the small people when it should be the big people? That was another digress. Back to, well, no, that wasn't a digress. It was a little bit on topic. I'm doing all right today. But political resistance. There is gotta be, and this is making me want to do like more of my own little research, because again, this is my city. I live here. I spend time in these areas. And I didn't know that so much of this history was there. So very accessible to me. And that's part of the Beyoncé power, baby. That inspiration. Again, I'm telling you, follow your curiosities. Travel is so much more than vacation. And just because it's not necessarily something that you visit frequently, the tourist attractions in your city are available to you. This is the history, if it's a historical location, right, of your city. Because it's always one of those things where it's something that I saw a couple of times when going through these different websites and landing pages and the whatnot, saying that, oh, the people of this area know, but yada, yada, yada. And it's just like, do the people of the area know? Like, I'm thinking, I'm a Queens girl, right? How much do I know about Queens? I don't know shit. I know how to get where I gotta go, you know? But historically, what do I know about Queens from 100 years ago? What do I know about Queens from 50 years ago? I have always lived in this borough, except for a stint in college and a little bit after that. But for outside of 10 years, I have always proudly lived in Queens. And I can't necessarily tell you much about even my neighborhood, except for I know what it looked like when I was younger versus what it looks like now, like the average demographic of the population from just 20 years ago is different. You know, just the people that come through the area are different. It's just different. And so those lived experiences stay with me and I can tell you about that. But the history of the area, like why certain streets are named after certain people or just who the people that these fucking streets are named after, right? Those are the things that I'm encouraging you. Every once in a while, Google something. Was this street always called that? One of the main, there's a street, and I don't want to say main, but like it's a, it's, for example, I want to say it's the RFK. It's the Triborough Bridge. Like, it's always been called one thing, and then all of a sudden it was renamed. So for the longest, it's kind of like the way Twitter is legally not Twitter, but we still call it Twitter. There are streets, Guy R. Brewer Boulevard. I feel like the person that it was named after. No, let me not even say that because I could be conflating. But it used to be New York Ave. And so every once in a while, when I was younger, I would hear like older heads say, you know, New York. I mean, you know, New York. On Brewer. It had another name. Triborough. Now it's the RFK. So there are plenty of little places in your own communities that you are familiar with. But what is the actual history? Like, who were the people that this shit was named after? Why was the name changed? What are the little things, the little pieces of, you know, information that are tucked away that history books or landing pages and websites will say the communities know, but do they really? So there is a website, or it's actually, well, I've always known it as a publication, but turns out it's actually a website also. Time Out, I think it's timeout.com, or is it Time Out New York? Because I feel like Time Out may have, it's timeout.com. I feel like Time Out may have locations in like other, or may highlight other cities also, but Time Out is a fan fucking tastic. I want to say it was on Wednesdays. They used to hand them out in different parts of the city. So I know when I was working in Brooklyn, say, whatever was this, the 2015-16 era, like clockwork, on Wednesday, you get out the train and somebody's standing there handing out timeouts. Timeout is based, it's all free shit. every once in a while, there's something that, you know, has like a charge, or they absolutely include things that have cover charges and, you know, so that you have to pay for. But if you want something free to do in New York, that's your cheat code. Timeout.com is the New York cheat code for really cool and interesting shit to do. It's a lot of niche shit. Like, you can find real artsy shit, then you find like real big name ticket things. But in terms of any of the boroughs, they're going to have shit for you to do. They'll highlight different areas, because when people come to New York, not everybody visits Manhattan. Not everybody stays in Brooklyn, or you don't necessarily stay in Times Square. You stay in the Lower Manhattans, or you stay in the Astorias or the Long Island cities, or the Williamsburg and the, you know, Ditmas Parks. You stay in other smaller communities that you absolutely have access to. Manhattan, like the TV Manhattan, if you would like to be in that area. But Time Out is a publication that you can find online. I haven't seen a printed copy of it in ages, but it's updated very constantly with free and low cost activities all over the fucking city. And I have a link in the description box for that. What's it called again? Because I am definitely not going and absolutely avoiding all those streets, because this baby drives. I drive. Okay. I'm in the car when I'm out here. What is it called? Open Streets Car Free Earth Day. So, encouraging, leave your cars behind. There are a lot of different streets that are going to be closed to car traffic. Certain areas do that for Halloween for a few hours. And there are certain streets in the city that are always closed to car traffic. Certain streets in Times Square area. There are, I feel like during the summertime, there's a block, I think it's like Vanderbilt off of Atlantic, is closed to car traffic for a large portion of the time. There's a stretch of, there's a stretch of Broadway that is closed to car traffic in Manhattan. There are a lot of little pockets. I believe there's a stretch on Jamaica Avenue where there is no car traffic now. That's in Queens. So there are a couple of little pockets that'll be a main street that either has very restricted car access or no car access. And that is generally kind of peppered with some pedestrian seating or larger like blocks or rocks for like people to sit on, and also just to keep cars from traversing the space. But there are quite a few of those that are a permanent fixture in the city. But during this little time, on April 22nd of this year, there are going to be a substantial number of other streets throughout the boroughs that will be closed off for pedestrians. The other part was also a lot of the abandoned lots. I'm thinking of like the little pocket gardens in the city. There's one that I see in my head, but I cannot place where the fuck it is, because I feel like I've always like passed by at night. I feel like it's by 14th Street, because I feel like that 14th Street, that, is it the Angelica Theater? There's like an indie theater that's like in the general area. Couple of really cute dive bars, but there are really cute little garden areas in the middle of the city that are kind of tucked in between different buildings and stuff like that. And they are open to the public. There is actually a tulip something, I forgot what it's called. And I believe that it is in early May. But again, that's on Time Out. The link that I'm going to drop has a lot of different Earth Day events and stuff like that. And they particularly had the link. Actually, I'll go back. I'll include both, because I feel like I already bookmarked the one about the open streets, but there was a larger one that just had like Earth Day events and shit like that. I think that's what it was. I looked up Earth Day and then found what I was looking for. But anyway, Time Out is a good resource for that. But say all that to say, reclaim spaces. Do you know your own community's history? What about your like community's history can you reclaim in what fashion that means for you? So again, travel is so much more than vacation, y'all. There are so many little opportunities to step into the broader picture, the wider story of it all, and find yourself in that nuance. And like I said, back to the Beyonce. So we're going to close this out pretty quickly because your girl's also hungry and I can smell my baby and they're cooking it up. My favorites on the album, in no particular order. Actually, order from the top, from top listing. When I tell you, when Protector came on, I said, wait, was that what I thought it was? First song that I replayed, ran that shit back. Baby, I bawled. I was in the shower on, what was it? Was it Friday morning? Yeah, because it hit at midnight. Bawling. Just, oh my God. As an adult, I get it. Also, tangential, because this is all probably going to be tangents at this point. Shout out to those of y'all that are going to keep listening from here. I watch and consume all content so differently now. And it has like very, it has been so very clear and apparent to me probably for the last year or two, like a very strong, specific noticing of this. I watch everything from the parents' perspective now. It's something that I didn't even consider. Younger me, always watching whatever, whether it be a movie, a show, listening to music. When something about a parental relationship comes up, I have always looked at it as the child. It is now absolutely like a secondary thought at this point. Whenever there is some type of familial or parental relationship described, I am always looking at something from the parent's perspective because now I'm the parent's age. I love being an adult child because they're actually fun now. They're like, when we was little, they not one of your little friends. Now they are. Hey, Ma. But I just get it so much more now that I'm older and that perspective has just shifted. So watching movies is just like, oh my God, oh my God, I would be terrified if my baby ran in the street like that. Or yo, that little nigga is wild and I would have whooped his ass. Or ooh, I get why she's an alcoholic. I see it. I do. Stuff like that, right? So Protector, first song that I was, oh yeah. She did a big one with this one. Love that song. Daughter, Caramibella. I don't speak a lick of Italian. But yeah, Daughter, that one. I am curious as to the perspective, like Daughter and Alligator Tears. I feel like Alligator Tears, and this is another thing. I have thoroughly enjoyed everybody's, all the commentary. The comment section is where shit goes to part. It just falls apart. But I feel like I have been pretty good at my social media kind of being in alignment with my moral compass, like my I feel like, thankfully, I don't really see too much hateful content. It's there, but it's not like excessively displayed to me in the experience that I feel like, okay, I need to log out kind of thing. Because I've heard from people say, oh no, I can't do social media. It's too bad. And I'm just like, well, who the fuck are you following? Why are you following accounts that make you feel that way? We got to change that. Don't follow people that make you feel that way. Curate your content. Like, you don't have to see anything you don't want to see. People that start talking about, oh, Blue Lives Matter, block, 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 delete. Oh, you people, ooh, baby, you people, who doesn't even matter. Block, 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 block. That was very big and easy to do on Facebook because people will tell you who they are. I don't give a fuck who you related to, how long we've known each other, how often in a week I need to see you. Talking about you, coworkers that might come across this episode, blocked. As soon as I question whether or not humanity for me, black woman, you don't even got to be talking about me, because a lot of them will sit there in your face and talk about, oh, but you're not like them. Cut it out. We don't need to be friends. We could work together. We don't need to be fucking friends. No, I'm not going out to drink with you after. Back to the set list. So let's say daughter and alligator tears. I am curious as to like what the song is about, whose perspective she may or may not be singing it from, those types of details about the song, right? I have loved hearing other people's interpretations of the album, all the historical nuggets that come out. Spaghetti, which is another top tier track. Fucking love Spaghetti. But Spaghetti refers to Spaghetti Westerns. And it is wild to me. Shout out to those student loans that I have finished paying off, that I think I only owe them people like, I don't even think I owe $1,500. I don't know, but I'm basically done with my student loans. Praise him. Amen. But I was a communications major, media studies minor. So I watched a lot of fucking movies. And we had one class that was film studies. And we had an era during that semester where we discussed Westerns in particular. And I am wondering if it is me, or maybe a day I didn't show up, or part of the lecture that I missed because I was wild late. But Spaghetti Westerns. When the Italians started making, you know, Westerns, it was considered a spaghetti Western because you're not authentic. You're not real. You're not what a real Western is. You're a bunch of Italians that are making what you think a Western is supposed to look like. You're taking American culture and subverting it and making an Italian movie. So Spaghetti Westerns, the song Spaghetti. So there was a really, really cool explanation of the song and how they believe that that is what the reasoning behind calling it spaghetti, because in this track that she lists a lot of my Lord, there are multiple words that I want to say come to mind, kind of like definitions, ideas floating in my brain. But basically, this is so frustrating. It's like my brain freezing on me. It's something that you say about a group of people that is like a commonly believed thing, but not necessarily true to the group of people. She's speaking on a lot of those in the album, in that track in particular. So that is the reasoning why they think that that's why it's called Spaghetti. Honestly, it's a fucking West. It's a Cowboy Carter. Why would it not be that reasoning, right? So Spaghetti, pop, pop, gang, gang, fucking love it. Alligator Tears, absolutely love it. I don't remember who it was I saw, but I think I saw another little video that was saying that they think Alligator Tears is more like a social commentary about, or was that me combining what I'm thinking it means in somebody else's shit? But I think that one's kind of like a social commentary, like the how does it feel to be adored kind of thing, people like white folks always complaining like, oh my God, like, oh, well, we experience racism, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, girl, stop it. Stop. Right. So that's kind of where I'm going with that one. Two Most Wanted. I think that's probably, I don't know, because that might be my favorite, but it might not. Oddly enough, but it might not, which is crazy because that's one of the, I think Two Most Wanted is probably the best song on the album, dare I say. I don't know. This is a tough one, but I fucking love Two Most Wanted. Adore it. Absolutely do. It just is what it is. Yaya, also love. But baby, Riverdance. I fucking love Riverdance. I think like today, Riverdance is probably my favorite song. Today. On the day of recording. I think Riverdance is probably like my favorite song. It wasn't yesterday. Might be something different tomorrow. But today is Riverdance. Fucking love that song. Two Hands to Heaven. I mean, and then basically ending on sounding like we're doing a Jodeci cover. Like, what? That might be tomorrow's favorite song. Don't know. But my God, Tyrant, because... Okay. Love it. And then Sweet Honey Buckin', because baby, Buckin'. Whoa. Like, fucking love it. So 2, 4, 6, 8, those 10 absolute favorite songs. Love them down. Replay them often. Generally, what I'll do is if I've got something stuck in my head, I'll start there and then just play the album from there. So whichever song is stuck in my head at the time, that's generally where I start. And when all else fails, I just go to the either to Protector or Two Hands to Heaven. Excuse me, Two Most Wanted. Generally, one of those two places I'll start and then just... Oof. So honorable mentions, American Requiem, just because the arrangement is absolutely beautiful. Beautiful song. Desert Eagle. Levi's Jeans. I really enjoy the lyrics to Levi's Jeans. The song itself doesn't really do it for me, but when I listen to the song, like when I listen to the lyrics, I fuck with it. Jolene, because Jolene. Texas Hold'em. It is just so fucking catchy. I can't, like, love it, right? Also love the way that that song progresses. Really enjoy Texas Hold'em. Bodyguard, because it's absolutely summer. It's giving road trip. I am so excited to drive someplace and listen to this album, y'all. You have no idea. Hoping that I get time approved around Memorial Day. So that road trip can happen. We might do it anyway and then just have to suffer through driving back to New York on Memorial Day, which I don't want to do, but we'll see. What was I up to? Texas Hold'em, Bodyguard. My Rose. Fucking love My Rose. I love My Rose. Like it's one of those, I think that perfect analogy. For me, don't know if you're going to follow. The Wiz, my favorite movie. Also love the soundtrack. I actually listen to The Wiz soundtrack for shits and giggles. I enjoy the music. On The Wiz soundtrack, while I love plenty of them songs, slides them all to me. Love that shit. The Tin Man song, when he gets introduced, slides them all to me. That is... such a good fucking time. But that song, Home. Brand New Day. No Bad News. Like, love The Wiz. However, my personal rah-rah song, like my personal pick me up, my personal, like when I am like, I'm not even gonna hold you, when I'm at my lowest, I play Be a Lion. That is my Rocky song. That song has gotten me through some shit. I fucking love that song. And I think a good comp for how it makes me feel better in the moment is My Rose. Something like it's just a beautiful song. It's short and the messaging is fucking beautiful. So I love my rose. It is my Be a Lion to this album. While there are other songs on here that I appreciate more in terms of enjoying the song, like liking for what it does for me, that one. And then Blackbird, because it's just a beautiful song. I honestly wish that, and I'm pretty, our good sis Beyonce knows what she's doing, so I'm trusting her. I am thinking that this is probably one of those songs that somehow grows into something else. I don't know how, but one, I love what Cowboy Carter is doing for the artists who have already been working in this genre and busting their ass and dealing with all the vitriol and, you know, the naysayers, the, you know, just the hate and the just nastiness of a lot of people. So shout out to these beautiful people, especially my chocolate folk, baby. Colorism is a real fucking thing. And I know that it's one thing to be a black artist in a genre that nobody really wants you to be in, but then to also be a dark-skinned woman or a dark-skinned man or a dark-skinned person, period, however you identify, your experience is going to be rougher. So I love what this project has done for the artists who have already been doing the work. And I am excited to see what this actually means for radio stations, if it makes sense. I don't listen to radio stations often. Honestly, we're like a 1010 Winds or NPR kind of car. But what is the station? I cannot remember what it is. I used to be a WBLS girl, RIP to 107.5. But, well, at least for us in New York, it was 107.5. WBLS. That used to just play like old school R&B and like new school shit. But the way WBLS used to play like old and new, it would also play R&B, it would play soul, you'd get some hip hop, you get some rap, like you'd get a little bit of everything, but mostly like R&B and soul, right? But you got it peppered in there with some more contemporary music. Well, a lot of the music was contemporary, excuse me, but I mean more R&B and hip hop. We've got stations like Hot 97 and Power 105, which I'm not much of a huge fan of either at this point. Honestly, I feel like the breakfast shows. I feel like the morning shows across all the stations, I just can't sit through anymore. I'm not in that era of my life. I'm certain that there are people who this is for and they love, but I don't want to start my day with gossip anymore. Used to love it down. Used to listen to it every morning on wherever the fuck I was going. In the morning, somebody's radio show was on. Not there anymore. Old me, loved it. Me now, can't do it. But say all that to say, we've got black stations. I can't say I've ever heard a black country artist on said stations. Now, when I was younger, junior high school me, back when MTV and VH1 actually played music videos, they would play videos from all different types of genres. I remember, I'm even gonna hold you, little bingo fact, D. Carey lore, I don't even think I've said this to so many people ever. So I'll never forget. Let me see what it was. I got to look this up because I'll never forget. It was in the morning time and I was in maybe like between 7th and 8th grade. Let me see, 702. Let me do 702 discography. Because there was a song. Oh, That's what it was. So their first album, 702 No Doubt, it was 96. So I think I was, what, sixth grade? It could have been, like, I don't know when it came out in 96. Also, I don't even know when we had this conversation. So it could have also been anywhere between 96 and 99. Promise you, because I was in high school by 99. I started high school in 99. So it was between 96 and 99. Say all that to say, 702's debut album was called No Doubt. My friends were talking about No Doubt. I thought they meant the band No Doubt. That is probably the first or like the primary memory I have of being socially embarrassed around my peers by not being like up to date with what like current topics and current events were. But baby, that's because my current music came from watching MTV and VH fucking one. My parents didn't really play music in the house. We listened to music in the car, but my parents only listened to CD 101.9. Fucking smooth jazz. I could tell you if Boney James or Sade or Anita Baker or Regina Bell had some new music. But in terms of the shit that my friends were listening to, the new shit that I heard was going to be on MTV or VH1. And I don't even remember how we got there at this point. But yeah, the different radio stations, I don't really feel like they do a good job of really just, and I can't say where or when, more so when like payola became a thing, people paying for their songs to spin and stuff like that. That could have always been the case, right? We've seen a lot of movies about older musical artists or groups or whatever, where they had issues getting their shit played and all that, right? So we know what happens and exists. But the way these different platforms have always been in charge of gatekeeping, just keeping certain artists from crossing over into different pockets, into demographics, right? So you had a while when like MTV wasn't playing black shit. It was just a lot of white groups. And then we ended up with BET. And after a while, like they started, like, I don't say like integrating, but we got a lot more voices. Like there were more black and brown artists that you would start to see highlighted in the music video selection that MTV especially did it first. To me, the way I noticed it more so on MTV. So I started kind of watching more MTV as opposed to VH1, because I feel like VH1 kind of, it felt like it was more like an older audience. Like my older cousins might be fucking with it. Like there was shit there for me, but then it was just kind of like, I don't know if I want to watch this. Let me see what MTV is doing. It was channel 19 and 20. So you went from 19 VH1 to channel 20 MTV. But you know, I don't know what is, I'm hoping that this could quite possibly be, I don't say the democratization of music. The beautiful thing about music now is we have the ability to seek out what we're interested in, as opposed to whatever station's coming clearest telling us or being the judge of what we have to listen to. So it sucked. And it still sucks that, and then also do they have a top 40? I don't even know I'm certain that there has to be stations out there that do a better job of just playing the top 40 hits, as opposed to, you know, curating and picking the artists that they highlight. Don't know. I'm not really into the radio anymore, but overall, I'm hoping that this project, as our good sis Beyonce has mentioned in her what was it, the iHeartRadio acceptance speech for Innovator of the Year. I think it was Innovator of the Year, but it's just an Innovator Award. I don't know if it was for the year, for the decade, lifetime. Not sure. Because I wouldn't be against a lifetime Innovator Award either, because the Beyonce. But I'm hoping that this opens doors for Black artists to be, Black artists especially, to be highlighted across the gamut and by a lot more. I hope the gates get let down. And I hope that Black artists are able to be heard by a larger audience, because I can easily say that Black artists are going to be more heavily restricted than their white peers. However, I am also not against putting, maybe I'm going to take that. I mean, that's what I think it is. I think that more so mixing the different artists is just finding a station that plays everybody. Because in fairness, if you like country music, you're going to listen to a country station. I think they should be playing Black and white artists who perform country music at equal rates. And if you like hip hop, you should play good hip hop music. But I think if you want a mix of all the different things, like I was way more familiar with growing up, where you've got Mbop followed by Escape and Britney Spears, and then Mbop is a Hanson song, y'all. So Hanson, Escape, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, then give me a little Jessica Simpson, but then follow it up with 112, Missy. Let's do another Missy track. And then, like, Maya. You understand what I'm saying? Like, we can do a better job of exposing people to just good music. And that's a personal reason why I just don't listen to radio stations. I would prefer to just listen to the music that I have on my heart at the moment, and then fuck around and see who I can find. What do you call it? With like, the, I'm a Spotify girl. So then the, is it the radio? Because you could do the radio station of an artist, or you can do like the radio station of a track. There are options. I appreciate them all. All right. So again, hungry. This has been a long episode. I had a lot of fun with this one. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. And again, whatever social you're on, hit me up. Let me know what you thought about the episode. I would love to hear some feedback. What are you listening to? What are the curiosities that you are following? Holler at me. Had a good time, guys. Bye.